Welcome, Sox fans. You're listening to the week of whatever week it is, the 4th of July weekend version of the best White Sox podcast on the web. We're talking about Sox Talk on the Air. I am Jason Gage, and back, that's right, the tenacious duo is back with me all the way across the country in Chicago, Illinois, just a few blocks away from U.S. Cellular Field. It is Mario Scalise. Mario, it's good to have you back.
It's good to have you back as well. I missed you.
I know. It's been awkward. You know, we haven't had our, like,
yeah,
Monday
for
morning
2 weeks
gatherings of talking White Sox baseball.
Last week, it was you and the two Alexes. And the week before, it was just me and Alex.
But finally,
it was weird.
But finally, The Rock, Mario Scalise, just came back to Sox Talk on the Air.
Right. But this past week, well, actually, not this past week, yesterday, right? Yesterday was the All-Star selections. That's when it all went down, finally.
That's right. Ozzy got to make his choices. He got to pick whoever he felt like. Aside, but obviously, other players have some votes and some say.
Yes. And we're not going to get into the actual entire AL roster, but there were six White Sox players selected by Guillen. None of them were actually starting players because, you know, that's how the voting goes. It was mostly Red Sox, Yankees, and then a couple
Ichiro,
other
teams. Pudge,
and
Guerrero.
Vladdy Guerrero. Yeah, but it was predominantly, I think, what, two Yankees, three Red Sox. So chances of the Sox actually making it as a starter outside of the pitching was a long shot. But they had six guys come in. The six guys, Jermaine Dye right field, Paul Konerko and Jim Thome at first. Pitching, from the pitching standpoint, was Contreras, Burley, and Bobby Jenks.
And then in the whatever man contest, the final roster spot, A.J. Pierzynski's eligible.
Yes.
Along with Hernandez, the catcher out of Baltimore, or Liriano, Hafner, and I'm sure I'm forgetting someone else.
So there's a possibility that seven White Sox players could make the All-Star team.
And just add a comment, and I know that Ozzy couldn't have picked more guys, but Pierzynski may be on the seventh man spot, but Joe Creedy could very well be the best third baseman in baseball right now.
You might be right.
And I'm not looking at, you know, long term trends, because if someone told me Joe Creedy or Alex Rodriguez, I'm taking Alex Rodriguez. I mean, salaries aside, everything else aside. I realize Joe Creedy has way more clutch hits his entire career than A-Rod, but A-Rod's been doing it for a long, long time. He plays Gold Glove defense.
Yeah.
Creedy plays Gold Glove defense, but although his defense hasn't been quite as dazzling as of late, he still makes the amazing plays, but he's been in a little bit of a funk.
But once again, if you're looking at this year alone, if you're looking at salary, you know, defensively, there's really not much better than him. You know what I mean? As Hawk would say sometimes, you know, you might find somebody who's just as good, but you're not really going to find anybody better than him, and that's the truth. And offensively, he's been solid. He's batting .300. He's probably on pace for over 100 RBIs, I would think. Probably hitting about 25, 30 home runs. He's going to have a really, really good year. And probably when you look at the Sox team, if you're looking for one guy who's probably been their best all-around player, offense and defense, it has been him. So for Guillen to really push for Pierzynski more so than Creedy is kind of questionable, unless they're just rewarding Pierzynski for this year and last year and what he's done for the team from an attitude standpoint and from the pitching staff standpoint. But I would still think Creedy should have gotten that nod.
I don't think Ozzy has anything to do with the final four. I think that's picked by Major League Baseball.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, and then the obviously the fans do the whole vote off type deal.
See, I believe that I thought it was Guillen had some type of say, not as far as who the guys were, but I mean, at least maybe with the guys, anybody from his team.
This year, his projected stats, get this, .303 average, .534 slugging percentage. His OPS would be approximately .867. Pretty damn good considering his defense.
Mm-hmm.
But listen to his production numbers, 33 doubles, 33 home runs, 117 knocked in. You're telling me that's not an all-star numbers coming from third base?
Yes, it is.
Coming from the hot corner? I think it's evident. First of all, he's having better numbers than Mr. Alex Rodriguez has put up. because right now Creedy already has 57 knocked in.
Well, the thing is the whole selection process with the starters is messed up, in my opinion. And I think you might agree with me with the fans voting, because fans aren't particularly smart. They're just going to vote for, you know, whoever's popular, not the guys who's actually having the best season. So you can't necessarily compare Creedy to Rodriguez. You would have to compare him to the bench guy, to the reserve guy. But even then, you know, when you look at the Sox and the fact that he selected six guys, should they have had a seventh White Sox? Would that have been right either?
Personally speaking, I think Ozzie can put as many as he wants on, because let's be honest, Joe Torre and Francona both kind of set a standard and said something that, you know, they said, hey, it is okay to do this, to favor your guys. And on one hand, can you really say that with their many guys better than Bobby Jenks closing? I know Jose Contreras has had a rough past four starts or so, but have there been many guys better than him, especially over the past, even the course of this year and part of last year? And I know last year doesn't count, but is someone better than him? Mark Burley, who's consistently been an all-star?
I think, this is really tough, because I think it's understood, and a lot of people are okay with a manager like Ian doing that, because you're going to do it with your guys. Because like you said, Torre did it, Francona did it, so it's almost like the point where, well, if they did it, I could do it, what's the big problem? But the thing is that if Ian does it this year, let's say the Sox don't go to a World Series, and let's say, you know, it's the Tigers, and, you know, Leland does it next year, and it just keeps on going on and on and on and on. You know, you're going to have guys who are stumped. You're going to have guys who are going to have great games. Now, I'm not saying Contreras really don't deserve it, but I think that managers have to look at it and say, listen, if I have two players, one guy on my team and one guy on the other team, and that guy is slightly better, you have to go with that guy.
I think it's very hard for a manager to do that, because they see their guy play week in and week out, and if they're picking, I mean, let's be honest, you earn that by going to the World Series, and you're going to reward your players. If the benefit of the doubt, it's going to come to your guy.
And I understand that.
And to be honest with you, I wouldn't put Jim Thome on the roster.
I would agree with you.
I would have Joe Creedy on there. I would have Creedy or Przinski, because I think Przinski is an all-star this year. He's not going to make it. I mean, if I was
I don't know.
If I was honestly voting, I don't know if I would vote for him.
How does Przinski's number stack up with, say, you know, Ramon Hernandez?
Well, he's hitting like 40 points better. Okay. Although Hernandez is more of a run producer.
Yeah.
You can talk defense in there. Hernandez is a little bit better, obviously, throwing out guys. But Przinski doesn't really have a chance to throw out guys, because half our rotation is terrible.
Yeah, but even when he has a chance, he usually does a pretty good job. Yeah, he's not a
But
very
he calls
good job
a great
that.
Game.
Yeah.
And if you think of all the intangibles,
yes,
he deserves to be an all-star. Jim Thome's been an all-star time in, time out.
And that's the thing with Thome. You have Thome, you have Canerico. Why pick both? You know, and I understand if Thome is having like a great season. He's having a good season, but if he's having just this unbelievable, remarkable season, and you know, you want to go out there and say, okay, now you have Thome, you have Ortiz, neither of these guys could really play first base, let's bring in a Canerico, fine. But in this case, he should have just stuck with Canerico, left Thome out, especially since he's been on the team so much, bringing guys like Diane Creedy, who have been, you know, productive players, and especially a guy like Creedy, who has never been there. You know, and what he did in the World Series last year, that's the thing. You brought it up a minute ago, rewarding your players. You win the World Series last year, you're going to reward your players. Why not reward a Creedy who, if it wasn't for him, you could say maybe the Sox don't win the World Series. You could maybe say that. There were a lot of guys last year, guys like Creedy, guys like that. You could say, if it wasn't for them, maybe you don't get the World Series. Even in Noguchi, you could say, if it wasn't for him, maybe you don't get there. But Thome didn't do anything. Thome was in Philly, hurt. So if you're going to talk about rewarding your players from last year, or rewarding your team for last year, why not select a guy like Creedy, or even a Noguchi, or even a Przinski instead of a Thome?
Or how about we just select one player from our team? Just Lance Berkman.
Lance?
Phil Garner did.
That was weird, too.
I mean, if I'm one of those players, I got to think, especially... And I don't agree. I think it was Jeff Brantley. I'm not sure who was talking about it on bit. And I never agree with Jeff Brantley.
Craig
Biggio deserved. I don't give a rat's behind. This is his last year.
But once again, this is a tough debate, because You might have a manager who's rewarding his players, even though they may not be statistically good enough. But then you have a manager who is doing it the right way and saying, "I'm going to pick the best players." It's a tough call, especially when you have the starter selection screwed up, where you're going to have guys who are going to be screwed. You know what I mean? You're going to have guys going to be left off. So in that case, if you have an all-star selection in which the starters are picked up by fans on a popularity contest, you're going to have good players left off. If the managers then in turn leave those good players off for the guys in their team, now you have two instances in where players are being snubbed. So I could see that. I could see that perspective that Gardner was taking.
I'm sorry. Craig Biggio's last hurrah. It happens. A lot of players in their last hurrah get put on. I mean, I'm kind of surprised. If Roger Clemens was pitching the whole season, he probably would have been on, regardless of what his numbers were for the most part. As long as they were mediocre,
but see, he'd been on.
If it really was his last year.
I wouldn't agree with that. Just because there's no last hurrah with Roger Clemens, there hasn't been a last hurrah with Roger Clemens. I don't even want to get on him because I don't care for him. You know what I mean? Let's forget about the All-Star selection process, you know.
Congratulations to those Sox representatives. Yeah. Everyone else who made the All-Star.
I mean, it is good to see six Sox players, and the nice thing is that none of them will be starting. So, you know, unless maybe Burley, but I really would doubt that. None of those guys are going to be starting, so at least six guys, if they're not going to have starters, at least having six guys is nice. But let's get on to the Sox. They face the Pirates and Cubs this week when, if you're looking at the talent that they're playing, probably the easiest week they're going to have all season, if you really look at it.
And honestly, with the type of baseball they were playing entering this, I know the Pits, they were both on the road, but you expect to take – I mean, they did what they did, and they won both series, and you give them credit for that. But you almost expect even 5 out of 6 in that type of situation, knowing that you may have one bad outing. But – A bigger problem has came up, and it's really been something that's kind of been looked past as the weeks have gone by, and we've talked about the bullpen, we've talked about Brian Anderson, we talked about Juan Uribe and the holes that they were in the lineup, but this past week, the past 7 games, the White Sox have scored 50 runs. That's phenomenal. And they led, I think, baseball in the month of June in runs scored.
Yeah.
But they gave up 45 runs during that span against Pittsburgh and the Cubs. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about two teams that don't score runs.
This rotation hasn't really been on par all year, and I think the one thing you could have always said is that, you know, they're not pitching up to their capabilities, but they're still holding their own in a way. You know what I mean? But if it keeps on going, you have to start wondering, you know, what else can you do? You know, what else can you do then worry? You know, is Vasquez going to, you know, kind of get it figured out? Even though I think he's been solid for the most part, you know, Garcia and Garland, you know, are they starting to make progress? I think Garland has. I think he still has his bad innings, which he's got to get over, but I think he's made some progress. But you wonder, are they ever going to get it over at all? Because if they don't, how far are they going to be able to go down the stretch of the season in the playoffs if they don't have a solid rotation? Because this offense, I think, is great, and I think it's productive, and it's a powerful offense, but what if it gets cold at the wrong time?
It could just be like the Boston Red Sox. The offense gets you, like the Boston Red Sox last year, the offense gets you in, the pitching loses it for you. Because right now, our pitching staff, if we went and played, and I know we've beaten the Tigers, but we go and play the Tigers right now, or even the Minnesota Twins in a 7-game series in a playoff type atmosphere, we lose.
Well, I wouldn't say that because they've played the Tigers this year, and even when the Tigers were playing good, the Sox playing bad, they still were able to beat them. So,
well, remember we played the Tigers the second time. It was in U.S. Cellular, and the Tigers were not playing good baseball either. Both teams were playing bad baseball, and after that series, both teams picked up.
The Tigers were playing bad baseball because they just faced the Yankees and the Red Sox.
All I gotta say is their starting pitching is better than the White Sox starting pitching, and it's not even close.
I will say this. As bad as
I don't care how much talent we have, theirs is producing, ours is not. It's that simple. And I realize that
despite them producing, they're still only 2.5 up on the Sox. But I'm going to say this. I'm going to say that if there's one thing the Sox have done this year is they've played up to their talent. You really look past this week. This week they've been horrible. If you look starting with that Rangers series, okay, or earlier in June, with the Rangers series, Cincinnati, St. Louis, and Houston, the Sox played some really good baseball back then against four quality teams. Quality teams. Maybe not great teams, but four quality teams nonetheless. Rangers, Reds, Cardinals, and Astros. They played good. And maybe they have a tendency to play down to their talent. Didn't they lose a series against Tampa Bay this year? I know Kansas City actually might have taken a couple at some point this year too. Maybe they played down to the talent. I think when it comes to stepping up and playing in against those better teams, I think the Sox have a good chance. I think if the Sox and the Tigers were to play tomorrow, I would still like the Sox beating them.
Not me. Not right now. Not with the way this pitching staff is pitched. And all I'm going to say is, if you want to know anything about Javier Vasquez, it's the fact that he has five quality starts outside of the ones against the Kansas City Royals, who he's really dominated.
Yeah.
And lately he's been flat out horrific with an ERA that's horrendous. He's got his ERA up into the fives.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Alex and I talked about the fact that I was never much of a fan of the trade. I didn't hate the trade, but I think it is about time where you go. This is why Javier Vasquez has been moved twice now in the past two seasons.
But I'm going to say this, and not to say that it could happen again, and not to say that, you know, once you find, you know, diamond in the rough and once something good happens, it's always going to happen. But a lot of people were saying the same thing last year halfway through the season about who?
Jose Contreras.
You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that Vasquez has the talent Contreras had, because I think Contreras has unbelievable stuff. You know, not many guys are going to be throwing 95 and having that, you know, the forkball that he has, that breaks that he has, and you know, the arm angles and everything else. But there is still some talent in Vasquez to pitch better than he has. So maybe it's just a matter of time with him and Cooper and Guillen or whatever for him to figure it out. Who knows? Maybe he busts out in the second half.
See, I don't think Vasquez's stuff is all that good. I think every damn person overrates him completely. He is not a dominant pitcher.
I think his stuff is good enough to be a good pitcher. I don't think his stuff is good enough to be an ace.
He's not good enough to be an ace.
And I never said he's an ace. That's a good pitcher.
But listen to me on this. Vasquez, Jose Contreras, we knew if he could throw strikes and be aggressive, he would be good. Javier Vasquez throws strikes. So what really can he change, unless it's a whole mental approach? And I think we already know the guy's a mental pussy. I mean, let's be
but
flat out honest.
Was Contreras a mental pussy too? You can't say
no,
Contreras
was.
No, he was
not. Jose Contreras.
You can't say he wasn't.
Jose Contreras is not. You don't get a nickname Bronze Titan, and you don't become like the god
of
Cuba.
The nickname. I don't give a rat's ass about a nickname. All I remember is Jose Contreras being afraid to throw a fastball. That's being a pussy. If you want to call Vasquez a pussy, you have to call Contreras for a pussy for not throwing a fastball. Not having confidence in your fastball, that means that you're being a pussy. Even like John Garland, he's afraid to throw inside this year. You could call him a sissy. You could call Cliff Polite, who's afraid to throw inside with a fastball, a sissy this year. You could call a lot of guys a sissy.
No, there's another thing. Jose Contreras comes over. He has a lot more things going on, and he had the Yankees trying to do one thing, so he had everyone in his head. As they tried it, because the Yankees wouldn't let him throw it at his other arm angles, and the Yankees basically wanted to tell him, no, you can't do that. You got to become an over-the-top pitcher. You can't do that to a guy like Contreras.
So
Javier Vasquez, on
so
the other
in
hand,
that case,
has
in,
whined
so
every
if,
single place he's
so
been.
If you have a situation where a guy is telling you, we don't want you throwing sidearm, you're just going to say, okay, well, I'm not going to throw my fastball? That's what your reaction is? I'm not going to throw my fastball?
You also have to remember he
it goes both ways.
Fastball that much.
It goes both ways. While the Yankees obviously did screw up on him because he's a very talented guy, Contreras effed himself up those first few years anyway. Because you don't go into a situation like New York, take all that money, and then be surprised. No. You got to go out there and do whatever you got to do. And he wasn't pitching anywhere near his capabilities because he was throwing a forkball every single damn pitch. And that's why he was a very below average pitcher for all those years. And what's that?
Do you honestly think that Jose Contreras, being in Cuba all his life, had any freaking clue what it would actually be like playing for the New York Yankees? You want pressure. It's playing for the Cuban national team. That's pressure. point over there for Fidel Castro. He can handle the pressure.
So then there's no excuse. There was no excuse for him.
It was more the fact that he came over here into an entire different league with his family over there, and he has no idea whether they're alive, whether they're in jail, what exactly is going on. Let me see you guys pitch over that. I don't think there's many, if any, in baseball that could do that.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but the fact is that you step on the field, you took all that money, you better be ready to pitch and not just completely avoid your best pitch because you're afraid to do it. I'm sorry. I completely disagree with that. And as far as Vasquez, once again, we don't know. He has been, you look at his time with Arizona, he pitched decently. With the Yankees, he had some decent starts. He's been on or off. He either pitches really good or really bad. He showed some promise in Montreal. Maybe that's what everybody's sitting on. Maybe everybody's sitting on the promise that he had in Montreal.
That's what it's about. And since the All-Star break when he was with the Yankees, this guy has an ERA well over 5. Well over 5. That's all I'm going to say about Javier Vasquez.
All I'm going to say is that I think there should be more of a wait and see.
But I think it was a bad trade. And whatever he does, I think we stunted the growth of Brandon McCarthy, something he could have been doing, and he could have been pitching better than Javier Vasquez this year. I don't care anything about that. And the fact is, our rotation, Contreras, Vasquez, and Burley all had some pretty poor performances this past week. Contreras has about 4 straight starts where he struggled.
And the streak with Contreras, everybody's hung up on it. You know, he kept the streak going. Doesn't make a difference. He pitched bad in June. He pitched bad. So forget the record.
He pitched bad. Vasquez was awful. Garland and Garcia. Garcia was the best pitcher we had in June, along with Burley. And Garland had one bad start in June, going by my math. And that was 2 starts ago where he really struggled with his control.
But, you know, like I said, as bad as this rotation has been, if you want to look at a positive standpoint, they're still better than most teams out there because you know what these guys can do. As much as Garcia struggles, you know, throughout his career, he's proven that he could be a good pitcher. You know, Garland, even before last year, he proved he could be a solid pitcher. Contreras, even though he's pitching bad, he's still holding his own more so than what he was doing, you know, before the second half of last year. And Vasquez, as much as you may want to criticize him, he's still a decent pitcher. So these guys all have the capabilities of being decent pitchers. And if the Sox offense holds up, and if this bullpen, you know, I think this bullpen's been really good over the past couple weeks, if maybe they grab another reliever possibly, I think things will be in pretty decent shape.
Now, I'm going to stop saying things are in decent shape until this 5-man rotation starts pitching like they can, starts pitching like they did last year. And until then, I'm going to consider us a team that's going to go to the playoffs and lose. And that's the bottom line. We need pitching, and they haven't stepped up and done it. And they got to man up and take care of business and start pitching consistently and pitching good. They're very capable of it. Now it's time to go do it. Because the offense can only carry you so far, and I'm getting sick of them having to score 7-8 runs a game to win. Because we all know that that well is going to run dry, and you can't rely on offense.
I do agree.
So the offense is giving them time, and it's time for them to now step up. They're going to have a little bit of a rest during the All-Star break. Obviously, that doesn't. We have the 4 games up against Baltimore, and then we have 3 games against the Red Hot Red Sox. But between now and then, they're going to have to start getting something in here so they can go into the All-Star break with a positive attitude, get a little rest in, come back out, and start pitching like they're capable of.
All right. Well,
and
let's,
in terms of the bullpen, Cliff Bleet has rejoined the team. He cost us the game. Yeah, he lost the game in the first one, giving up a walk-off home run to Freddy Sanchez. And then yesterday, he came back in, and not that I'm going to put the blame of the loss on Cliff Bleet, because there's a whole lot of ways you can put it on in terms of the pitching staff. Mark Burley and Cliff Bleet stunk. We also had some errors in the field. So there was a lot of things going on, and our offense, as always, gave a great job and a valiant comeback attempt. But Cliff Bleet showed that he is not a major league caliber pitcher. Not right now, not with his arm hurt. And I'm not knocking Cliff Bleet.
I'm glad you said not right now, because if you had just stuck with the words beforehand, I would have had to question you. But you know, you are right. I have no problem with Guillen throwing him in. I'm sure some people are going to be like, oh my God, he sucks. We need. And you know where I stand on this. When you have 162 games and you have a Sox bullpen that, while it's been good, it could use all the depth it needs, getting Bleet out there, and even if you have to lose a game, getting him out there to see what he could do and maybe he could figure it out, I think it's worth it. And I think it's worth that shot.
And the basic way I can put it is, we didn't know after the Pittsburgh game whether he's back. He gave up a home run. That could very well be a fluke. One swing.
I didn't see that. Did you see it?
No, I listened to it.
I heard that it was actually a pretty good pitch. It was like low and in, and he just golfed it out.
But he didn't. I think he had a scoreless inning. The inning.
Yeah.
Before.
So I'm not. I mean, once again, and we said this I think a few weeks ago. We can't expect Pleat to go out there and do what he did last year because I think that's already. I think that that's really being dumb if you're going to expect that. But I think there is a possibility for him to be a decent reliever late in the game. And I think that's what we kind of have to maybe look for. Maybe get him some work, and maybe he turns into a decent reliever with the 4-year or whatever the rest of the year, and I think he does. It helps the Sox.
If they give him more than one more chance, and I'm being as nice as possible, they are making a vast major mistake. Because they have said now that they still need to see more. I saw enough of Cliff Lee yesterday to know that he's not capable of getting a major league batter consistently out with his current health state. He needs to be placed on the 60-day disabled list, have a surgery, rehab, and be ready for next year. Because, and I understand, Ozzie doesn't want to give up on him quite yet, but if we keep running him out there, it's going to hurt the bullpen, which has gotten some positive momentum going. And sure, maybe this was just a really horrendous outing against the Cubs in a park where the wind was going out, but he gave up 2 home runs to a guy with like 8 home runs his entire career in the minor leagues, no doubt, and he came up here and hit 2 home runs. This guy got hit. He leads every pitch up. He did so before he was on the disabled list, and with his injury and the bone chips, that's it. Put him on the disabled list because we don't have much time between now and the July 31st trade deadline. So the White Sox are going to have to see, can Sean Tracy do it? Maybe Dustin Hermanson can come back. He says he's going to be pitching in July. But they need to see right now if they have someone else capable. Otherwise, they're going to have to make one last trade for a reliever. That's the bottom line. I'm sorry, Cliff Pleat is not. He was great for us last year, and he could be great again next year or the year after. Maybe with the White Sox, maybe with another team. But with his current arm condition, he's not capable of getting major league batters out.
I'm not gonna argue with you on that. You could very well be right. You could be right. I'm gonna get off the bullpen and get into Brian Anderson. Kenny Williams once again gave him a vote of confidence, saying, "We're not gonna acquire anybody for center field. It's your job, you know, and of course his and Mikoviak's job, and that's it." Do you believe Kenny Williams when he says that?
I believe it's his job. I believe. This is one of his quotes. Anderson is our guy. I believe that. That doesn't mean he has to be our guy this year. And that doesn't mean he's not their guy off the bench. I do think the White Sox have interest in Sean Figgins. I do think they do. And I do think the White Sox would love to make a deal where they got Sean Figgins and Scott Shields. And I do think they'd be willing to give up one of their starters in that type of trade and move McCarthy into the rotation.
That's a very interesting idea. The problem.
The problem is to get stretched out.
But hold on, here's the thing. I do agree with that. Even if you have to send McCarthy in the minor leagues and whatever, I don't know how that would work. Here's the thing. Would the Angels want a Sox starter right now, considering the amount of money that they're getting paid? Now, I know even though guys like Vasquez and Garland and Garcia, they're getting paid some money, but considering the way the market is, if they could get going, that's a pretty solid deal, you know, making $8, $9 million a year, whatever they're making. But would the Angels want to make that deal? Do the Angels still see themselves in contention for this year?
I think they're stupid if they do, but they probably do. They're only like 6.5 games out, something like that.
So you could see them maybe pulling off a trade for our Garcia, per se? If that was the case,
White Sox would trade Garcia. I think there's one pitcher we trade, and it's Javier Vasquez.
If that trade was out there, and I think it would have to be Vasquez and someone else. I don't think
Josh Fields.
It would have to be another player. I think if, let's say, they were to trade Vasquez in a minor leaguer, and
talking top prospect. I'm talking Josh Fields, who's our best hitting prospect, and some sort of pitching prospect, maybe Ray Liotta, who's right there, is one
but
of our best
on,
pitching
but look,
prospects.
If you're getting Scott Shields, who is a good reliever, and one thing that I love about him is that he's so durable, he could go out there time and time again and be productive, okay? If you get a Sean Figgins, who I'm not sure his contract situation.
He's paid very cheap.
And I would so that's I would one assume thing. I would assume he could be a guy you could get and you could keep him for a few years. If let's say you do not want to keep Scott Pitsenik for after next year, you pop into Chon Figgis in left field. You have a Brian Anderson who you still will consider your future in center field. I'm talking about next year. Jermaine Dye, who probably should be signed, where does Josh Fields really doesn't come into the picture then? Unless they don't have intentions on keeping Creedy. So Josh Fields and his offensive numbers really wouldn't mean much because they would have a Figgis in left field who would then become the leadoff hitter.
Yeah, and Fields has major trade value because so he is playing
phenomenal. If that trade were to happen, I think it would have to be a trade that the Sox would have to pull the trigger on. Because once again, you're losing McCarthy in the bullpen, but you're gaining a Scott Shields, and Scott Shields is a better reliever than McCarthy. And McCarthy, if he stretches out an arm, could very well be a starting better starting pitcher than Javier Vasquez. So it would be an interesting trade. Now, as far as these other rumors, Andrew Jones, Miguel Tejada, I would absolutely hate any of these moves to happen. I would absolutely hate it. And it's not because of who we're getting. First of all, I think Miguel Tejada, one thing I hate about Tejada is he is one of the great players who loves to go in 1-for-40 slumps, and that would absolutely drive Sox fans crazy, whether they'd like to admit it or not, because he's one of those guys, he looks great on another team, but if you put him on your team, he's going to go in those long slumps, and you're going to be wondering what the hell's going on, so I don't even want to bother with him. But second, one thing I do not want this Sox team to become is become a Yankees team where they just say, ooh, we need a center fielder, let's get the best one available. And let's just throw a lot of money and throw a lot of prospect at these people. I would like for them to be a team. You're breaking up on me.
You need guys like Creedy and Pruszynski.
You need role players. Thank you. They have the Dyes. They have the Canericos. They have the Tomies. You don't need any big hitter. You don't need any big guy just to come up here and just make more emphasis on the home run. Keep it simple. Keep defense, and obviously Andrew Jones brings defense, Tejada brings defense, but bring guys who have a little bit more to them. Guys like Tejada and Jones, they're making a lot of money. Whenever you get a guys on there on your team who have a lot of salary on there, you're going to wonder, where's that motivation going to be?
Although, in those two cases, Tejada and Jones, those really aren't the typical Yankee pickups. The typical Yankee pickups are Gary Sheffield's. They tend to be older guys past their prime. Guys that have a lot of question marks.
But you're still in a situation in the White Sox where you're saying, we need a center fielder, let's spend whenever we can to get the best guy out there. And
it's not necessarily.
It's a cheap way to win. It's a really shitty way. What's that?
It's overboard. It's overkill.
Yes, it is. You're not being creative then. You're basically just throwing money out there, and I don't like that. I don't like that at all. The way the Sox won last year, they won it the best way you could. $70 million payroll. They got a lot of scrappy guys. They spread out the salary nicely outside of a few cases. And when they gave out money this year, they gave out money to guys who were on their team, you know? Or when they made a trade and they had another team, picking up the salary. That's the way to do it. But when you just start grabbing great players who are making, $10, $15 million, that's a pretty shitty way to do it, I think. And if the Sox were to ever pull off a trade like that for Tejada or to Jones, I would seriously question my interest in the White Sox. I would seriously question it big time. And I don't care how good they would be, I would question it. And I would like them a little bit less.
Well, I want to go back and I want to finish off something from the Angels' perspective of that trade I was talking about, because I think people are going to ask, why would they trade Chon Figgis? They love Chon Figgis, and it's entirely true. The Angels play Figgis all over the place, and he's been their key cog in the wheel, so to speak. But the Angels lack a center fielder. They lack a third baseman. Chon Figgis is not a legitimate third baseman because the Angels have realized you do need to have some power, and they don't have any.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if this Angels team, let's say, had some power in the corners in the outfield, a power center fielder, a first baseman at DH who had power along with a catcher, you could do fine with the Figgis at third base. He's adding a little speed, decent defense, whatever. But considering they don't have much power outside of Guerrero, really.
And the problem with Figgis is the Angels also need help in center field, but they have the worst outfield defense in baseball. And Figgis is not a great defensive center fielder. Is he an upgrade over Mikowiak? Possibly. And in Figgis' defense, he's never ever been an everyday center fielder. He's, you know, I'm
He
very
seems
sure
like a guy who, if you give him a chance, he could be a pretty
he'll
good
be an
defensive
average.
player. Yeah, he could
Yeah.
be a pretty good player no matter where you put him. Like, he'll put in that effort and he'll make the strides.
And if the Sox made this deal, I have to for that they're not going to give up Scott Shields for nothing either. They like him, and I do think we would, along with giving up a guy like Vasquez and a guy like Leota and a guy like Josh Fields, all are two of them are very top prospects. I do think we'd also have to take on a contract like Jeff Weaver's, part of it. The Angels paying most of it, but the Angels want anything they can to get rid of Weaver and have just someone pick up some of his money.
Well, I think
anything.
I think in that case you got to look in Weaver's case you have a lot of money for this year. So I think what you might do is you might see them say, okay, you give us Vasquez, we give us Weaver, and it might actually allow the Sox to give up
actually,
less players
yeah.
from the minor league standpoint.
Well, I don't think people understand just how much changes value these two guys. You're going to have to give up those two prospects and take on a guy like Weaver, but that may not be a bad thing because Weaver's capable of putting up the numbers that Vasquez has put up on the season. So if somehow a problem runs up and someone gets hurt, Weaver can go right back from the bullpen into the rotation.
I don't care for Weaver too much, but his productive years were in Detroit in an American League Central. Maybe there's something to it. Who knows?
In general, the reason the Angels are willing to let Figgins go is because they could then, and if they got a guy like Vasquez to enter their rotation, and people would say, well, then they still have made room for Jared Weaver. But Tampa Bay Devil Rays want Irvin Santana, and this may enable the Angels to move Irvin Santana to Tampa Bay in order to get Carl Crawford, who then comes in, replaces Figgins, Weaver enters the rotation, and they're set.
It all depends if they value the pitching of a Santana over the offense of a Carl Crawford. And let's not get in the Angels too much. This is a
but
Sox.
I was trying to explain the logic of that deal because there is a lot of sense to both teams in that it could mm-hmm. make some sense. And to finish things off, we're going to talk about some more teams not related to the Sox because we're going to talk a little bit quickly about the Detroit Tigers. The Tigers have had a couple games that they've lost on defense. And Fernando Rodney as well, who's given up quite a few runs for them, although we still remain 2.5 games behind him despite all our recent winning streaks and success. And then you have the Minnesota Twins, and I don't really want to get into the Tigers. We all know about the Tigers. We talked about them a little bit in the early parts of this show. But the Minnesota Twins have won 18 of 19. They're now 10 games back. And I think they're making a legitimate case, and I realize they're 10 games back, but they're only 7.5 games back behind the White Sox. And that's what we're talking about, the wild card.
They're going to be a force. They're going to be a team to reckon with. Now, I have some doubts. When you look at the two starters of Santana and Liriano, they're playing unbelievable, and they have loads of talent between both of them. I do have some doubts on how Liriano is going to hold up throughout the season. Something about the way he throws kind of gives me a weird feeling, you know, a Kerry Woodish feeling with them. Okay, but if he could hold up, And he stays healthy, and you have a Santana, they're going to be a dangerous, dangerous team that second half, especially with the amount of times they play they play the White Sox, they play the Tigers, and if the Indians keep on playing the crappy way that they're playing, beating them won't be much of a problem either.
Yeah, the Twins are going to have the schedule. They're going to have the opportunity to come back into this race if they take care of business against the Tigers and White Sox mm-hmm. and continue to do so. And continue to play well against other teams. I mean, they went on a fire and tear once they played the National League. Mm-hmm. But part of it was they got Liriano going. Johan Santana's going now. And that gives you 2 out of 5 games that you should win 90% of the time almost.
Based on the talent that you're throwing. Obviously, Santana has proven himself. And in Liriano's case, you just have raw talent. And he's on fire right now. And, yeah, I think in this case, you have to expect for him to go out there and win. And put up a good start.
And so that means that if basically one of their other starters wins a game, we're talking Radke, you know, you have quality guys in that rest of their rotation, Baker, that they've all of a sudden went 3-5 on the week, which is 60% winning streak. So if they somehow get a couple starts together, then it doesn't take much for them to have winning weeks and to win series
and
with those two guys in that rotation.
And slowly cut that lead little by little by little. Because I'm not criticizing the Tigers. I'm not criticizing the White Sox here. But you know what? Every team's got to go through that you know, 2 week period where they're playing crappy. It can very well come. You know what I mean? You could have the Tigers run into August, run into a week in August where just nothing goes right for them, where the rotation is off and the offense is off. And before you know it, if they lose 5-6 games in a row and the Twins continue to play the way they're playing, you know, it could be an interesting race. You know what I mean? I mean, you could see the Tigers and the White Sox maybe stumbling a little bit for a few weeks. And before you know it, you might have the Sox, Tigers, and Twins within, you know, 6-7 games of each other.
And at the same time, Minnesota, obviously, winning 18 and 19, you're due to lose at least a few games.
Yes.
So, you know, it'll be interesting. Of course, everyone said that about Cleveland last year, and Cleveland went gung-ho all the way to that final week where they just couldn't get the wins against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays to get that wild card berth.
I love the Devil Rays, man. They're such a pain-in-the-ass team.
Oh, they are. They're pesky. Pesky, as Hawk would say.
But,
Show's cutting off, so we're going to end it. Yeah. The White Sox play a four-game set with the Baltimore Orioles because we're going to that famous AL East. You know the best division in baseball? Oh, wait, no. No, that'd be the AL Central.
I'm looking forward for this Red Sox series, and I'm hoping the Red Sox continue to play good up until that series because I want to see the Sox. I always want to see the Sox play not only the best teams, but the teams that are the hottest. And the Red Sox, if they stay hot, they face the Sox, it'll be a good series. So hopefully next week we get the All-Star Week going on. So there's really not going to be much of a preview after that, but maybe we'll do like a mid-season.
Yeah, I think we're going to do a mid-season type show. Yeah. And that's it. We're back, Mario and Jason. So make sure you listen to our next podcast. And we'll be back doing more stuff, more good stuff, hopefully having some guests on as the second half of the season rolls on for what could be a very fun August and September.
Yes.
But we're talking about major playoff race, major playoff implications. And quickly, I know Mario's got a roll. Talk Bulls, talk Bears, talk Beehawks. I'm not going to do my usual spiel, but the Bulls are doing some good things. So check them out, talk up some sports. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.